Welcome to Nowhere to Run with Christopher White.
Hey everyone, welcome to Nowhere to Run. Thank you for tuning in. Let's see, you can go to the website, which is nowheretorunradio.com. You can also go to nowheretorun.podomatic.com. But I think that I'm going to switch podomatic.com back to 100 results per page, which makes it virtually impossible to navigate, especially if you have a slow connection. But the reason that I think that I'm going to do that is because iTunes, for whatever reason, if I have it at just 10 results per page, only shows 10 shows for download. So I think that I will sacrifice the Podomatic page as far as navigation for the iTunes people to be able to download a lot of shows at one time. And so I'll do that. I know the Nowhere to Run Radio, I'll try to keep that a little less cluttered, although it's just by nature cluttered. I just throw things on that site, and I don't know why I don't do some upkeep with that site, and maybe I will get around to updating it as far as the website goes. I need to update and put a few different things. Like, I want to put some banners for some of the music that I like, because music has really changed my life as far as praise and worship and things like that. It's really a whole new dimension to what I consider worship. I consider worship a very personal thing now, not something that is done in a church or anywhere else, really. I mean, it can be done in a church, certainly, but it seems this dimension of music is something that I think is something we may be built for. And I think that's why a lot of the Psalms were set to music. I mean, they were songs. That's what the whole deal was. And a lot of those Psalms are just praise. And so I think it's a really, like, ordained kind of situation. But everyone has different musical tastes. So, and my musical tastes are, oh, I don't know, you know, I've always liked the Bob Dylan, Tom Petty, rock and roll kind of situation, Ryan Adams, and those kinds of things, like the Black Crowes, and all those were my favorite secular bands. I will say that Bob Dylan has probably one of those most tremendous gospel albums called Saved, and it is intensely good. Bob Dylan is really, in that album, and he already, you know, obviously is a lyrical genius, but his theology and everything else in that album Saved is so amazing and deep. It's like he says things that are just so profoundly true, and things I just can't get over that album. It's called Saved. I think that he probably, you know, he's got his own issues or whatever, but that album was very, very good. I think he did it in 1980. Anyway, I'm digressing quite a bit. So, what are we going to talk about? We're going to have a lot of stuff to do. I just put out a video, and perhaps I'll play the audio for that. I'll play the audio for that later. I'll talk about a few different things first. I mentioned on the Frank and Chris show a few different things that I think I will re-mention here, because just in case anybody wants to do some research about it, I was thinking about doing something about C.S. Lewis, just a quick video about this, but the more I got looking into it, the more I was thinking it was probably something that somebody needed to write an essay or something about, which was really not my thing, so I'll just put it out there. C.S. Lewis wrote, and I've mentioned this a few times in the show, a book called The Hideous Strength, or That Hideous Strength. And it's a really, like, 1984 George Orwell type, you know, kind of sort of prophetic in a loose sense of the word, about the end times and how it relates to, you know, this situation. Well, C.S. Lewis wrote that book 2 years before 1984, and George Orwell actually reviewed That Hideous Strength and basically said, hey, this is possible what Mr. Lewis writes, but it's not probable because it, I think he basically said the divine aspects of it were illogical. And if you've ever read George Orwell's 1984, you'll recognize why that his version was extremely bleak when it came to the end of that book. It was essentially that there was no hope, and that no man is a hero in the face of torture, and that basically government will win, and it's a terrible thing, but we will all succumb to the boot in our face. So, whereas Mr. Lewis's book, although extremely well hidden, I mean, it's like extremely well hidden to the fact, to the point where I don't think a lot of people really picked up on it, obviously Orwell did, but I think it's even more important because I think that C.S. Lewis knew about a high-level kind of occult theocracy thing going on with real supernatural things actually guiding the direction of these people in these high places and the extent of like human sacrifice and things like that. I believe that he actually was aware of some of these things and encoded a lot of it into that book, That Hideous Strength. The book was part of a trilogy, the Space Trilogy, as it's sometimes referred to. I'm not sure if he referred to it as that or not. But I think that there's some research to be done there. If you read the book, you'll find different things about just really profound, profound stuff about the symbolism of not only how an elite group like that, like a secret cabal, would use people and use people's pride to get them to go along with it, but it really describes the pride and the deception of those people. I think that's why it's really interesting, is that it's like going into the mind in a lot of ways of those that have been deceived by the system. It's like he is writing from a perspective of knowing, sympathizing almost with those that are in not in a good way, but sympathizing as in knowing how it was that they could be deceived, those that are actually pulling the strings at the top of this extremely evil agenda. And it's just really, it's, don't get me wrong, it's wrapped in all kinds of like symbolism, kind of like a story. It's a fictional, very fictional story. And so it doesn't say anything outright, but it's extremely important, I think. So if anybody wants to do anything on that, I haven't seen a lot of stuff even be talked about there, but I think there could be parallels drawn to a lot of stuff that's going on now. A few other things I wanted to mention. I just picked up a church directory at the church that I've been kind of going back and forth to the last few weeks, and I really like it, and I just was really glad to be like drawn into this this fellowship that I think is really cool. And I really like going, and I never thought that I would be like, oh, Sunday's coming up. Awesome. But anyway, I got the idea of this church directory, and I'm looking through it, and I was like, there's like all these addresses and phone numbers here. And I was just thinking, if it ever became necessary, like something crazy happened where you wanted to warn a lot of people, you could like put a DVD in the mail and mail it to all whatever 500 people on that list. Or I don't know if there's 500, but whatever. I wouldn't suggest doing it for any old thing, or you know. But if something incredibly important came up, and you could put a letter in there saying, "Hey, you know, I go to your church, and I know this is going to sound a little crazy, but I just want you to know that I'm dedicated to the Lord, and I just felt compelled to do this, or whatever it is." And I think that it would be a very, very easy way to get to a lot of people about a particular issue, whatever that issue may be. Let's see. Another thing that I wanted to say, and I think this is really important, and this will prompt me to get started on this project, I think, is about miracles. I really think that I'm going to try to do a good movie. Like, I don't know, I've got this plan about making actual movies at some point. And I want to do something about miracles. It's been prompted by a friend of mine who I correspond back and forth with, and he was pretty impressed that miracles happen, and kind of impressed that it was so nonchalantly talked about among Christians. And I think that a lot of us have had several miracles on a pretty regular basis, but I'm going to ask any of you out there that have a testimony about a miracle to send it to me, and just put in the subject line testimony or miracle testimony or something like that. And you can kind of just give me a thumbnail of it if you want to, or you can put it out the whole thing. It doesn't matter. And what I'd like to do is to call you up and interview you and get you to tell and record it and just kind of have that audio for later use. If you have a pretty amazing miracle, or even if it's just, you know, whatever it is, if you feel prompted to send me a letter, just do that, and I'll send you one back, and we can get started on this project. I think it's going to be really cool. Eventually, I want to do some video with it, and I very well might get started on that pretty soon too. But I think that the audio testimony, you can do a lot of stuff with that too. So there's that, and another thing is the Tessarian issue. Quick update on that. I haven't really heard a whole lot from the guy after probably the last update. Interestingly, though, is that somebody did a show about him where they said, you know, made claims that he had several million-dollar houses and some other personal information about, you know, got somebody, I don't know, pregnant or something like that. I don't even remember all the details of it, but apparently what he has done is locked his forum, and so nobody can post on it anymore. And then I just got a letter from a friend who posted my video on the David Icke forum, and the moderators there took it down, and the correspondence with them at the David Icke forum was that they were not currently letting anybody post about Michael Tessarian, because Michael Tessarian had requested to them in a very distressed manner that nobody would post about him. What makes that kind of ironic, though, is that Tessarian is the guy that just a few weeks before this was asking for information about my wife and kids to be posted on the internet. And he himself posted my address and phone number, or what he thought was my address and phone number. And so it kind of makes it a little silly for him to be freaking out about people doing the exact same thing to him. And the stated reason some of these people did that was because he was asking for information about my kids or whatever, which of course I don't have any kids. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that one out there. Okay. I think that what I'll do now is get into some of the situation with the video that I just made. Made a video about the rapture, and let me tell you, I was not exactly thrilled about having the idea to do it. What I was actually doing the study on was about, I was going to do, and still am going to do, a promotion for the Ancient of Days 2009 conference. Just a short video like I did for Russ on his Black Awakening thing. And so what I was doing is grabbing some sound bites from different testimonies of people and that had alien experiences and things like that. And just going through these just reminded me that something really real was happening with these people. And these are now Christians, like, reflecting back on their experiences now in having seen it from a Christian perspective. And I got to tell you, it's really hard for me to listen to a lot of that stuff because it's so intense. But anyway, one of the things that somebody had said was that having been reflecting on this, they had like an experience where God told them, according to their testimony, that this was going to be used to explain away the rapture. And I remember, and that kind of struck a chord with me because that was probably one of the first things that I ever thought about. I mean, before I knew anything, I just had this feeling that somehow or another aliens would be used to explain the rapture. And it was the only thing that really made sense to me at the time. It was the only thing, it's this little string of conspiracy that I was grabbing onto before I had any idea that there was a conspiracy, or really even that there was a rapture. But anyway, so I was like, okay, I kind of dropped what I was doing about the video for then and got to writing this little essay about what I thought was going to happen and how it was going to happen. And in the process, had to talk a lot about the rapture. This was something I loathe doing, because of the division that comes up with that. And so I prayed it, you know, I was praying and thinking that, hey, God, you know, if I'm not on the right track here, you know, just let me know, put some big sign in front of me or just do something so I can not do this. And, you know, it was funny. I knew that I should do it because I really didn't want to do it, but yet knew clearly what I wanted to do. And it was just rolling off the, you know, I was just, you know, really being able to think clearly as I was writing it all out and wrote it out really quickly. So it was there. It was just I didn't really want to do it because I knew that I would get an onslaught of people telling me how, don't I know that this and that and whatever. And that was my point of the video, is that everybody, and you can go look at the comments in this video too, everybody is absolutely 100% sure and very, very upset with me for even coming up with any kind of theory about it, because they're so sure of their theory, and it can't be any other way. But the interesting is that they all have a different idea. They're all absolutely sure about something completely different. And that, to me, is my point, is that's part of the clue. And of course, my position is just to go ahead and let you know before we play this, because actually in the video, I did it visually. I showed you what my position was, but I don't think so I'll just tell you up front. My position is kind of like, as I wrote in the video, pre-wrath-ish, and that depends on how you define tribulation, but I do think that this sixth seal makes the most sense chronologically, that there is this earthquake a la David Lowe situation that happens around the sixth seal. I disagree a bit with David Lowe in that I don't know how quickly the progression of those seals are. I think it could be a little longer, that we might not clearly be at the fifth seal. We could still be, you know, somewhere in the fourth or even the third or whatever. I think the timing there isn't quite as clear, but I do agree with him that a chronological sixth seal rapture, and I think that there is a lot of questions yet to be answered, but I think that my point is that we need to be open to the other things, as I describe in the video, for a specific reason. I think that there is a reason why we can't quite put our fingers on it. And as Michael Heiser said, the reason there is a debate is because there is a debate, which I mentioned in the video as well. A lot of people, as I go through the Margaret MacDonald thing and stuff like that, so a lot of people have their, you know, this is a Jesuit thing that Jesuits came up with. And I can't see that, because we have Bible verses that say, you know, one is grinding at the mill and taken, and the other is left, and one is doing this and is taken, and the other is left. I mean, Jesuits didn't come up with that. I mean, Jesuits didn't come up with, you know, the Son of Man coming and gathering him up in the clouds and all these other things. To me, a lot of the anti-Darby mentality, and I'm not 100% sure about Darby. I haven't read him extensively or whatever, but what I have read of him seems to be he seemed to be extremely humble. And first of all, the whole I should also mention this, because it's also just written down in the Margaret MacDonald thing. It's not actually said by me in my voice, but that his connection to Margaret MacDonald was somebody that said that she was having a demonic vision. He clearly said that he knew that her visions were of Satan, essentially. And the interesting thing about that is, and what nobody actually looks up, is that Margaret MacDonald's vision was, if anything, post-trib, as I say in the video. So the funny thing about those that say that John Darby is a wicked person and that Margaret MacDonald was the originator of the pre-tribulation rapture is that Margaret MacDonald was the originator, if anything, of the post-tribulation rapture. And maybe not the originator, but certainly a promoter of it. And John Darby called her vision satanic. So John Darby is actually calling... So anybody that's post-trib arguing the Margaret MacDonald argument is on extremely shaky ground that is totally based on a lie. And I don't know... I know who the father of lies are, but I don't think that is a very sound argument. And again, I'll go through another thing or two, but as I point out, it's not my intention to come up with some new theory about the rapture. About as far as the timing, I just want to talk about the possible deception surrounding it. People, consistently say the secret rapture is just a big joke and everything else, and that it's not taught and all these other things. But it was taught, and I show a few different clips in the movie of places that it was taught well before the Catholic Church took over, and it was a big space for the 1,000+ years that the Catholic Church actually was keeping the Bible from people. But yeah, it was taught, this quote-unquote secret rapture. And in fact, I think the concept... I hate the term secret rapture anyway, because it seems derogatory for people that are trying to... And usually it's coming from people that don't like Darby, primarily because it means that the Jewish people have a right to the land of Israel. And that's where I think a lot of it comes from. So these people that say it's a big Jesuit, conspiracy, and that, John Darby was, the most wicked man in the world, usually believe a very prominent Catholic doctrine, which is that the church has replaced Israel. I can see thousands of different reasons why the Catholic Church would want to believe that the Catholic Church has replaced Israel, but I can't see any reason why somebody that's fighting the concept of the Catholic Church would believe something that kind of is a backdoor to believing an extremely Catholic doctrine. I think before people jump on the idea that the two-stage return of Christ is so ridiculous, should recognize that it's almost exactly the same kind of thing as a type of what the Jewish people believed about the two-stage coming of the Messiah, which is that they thought it was so ridiculous and worthy of mocking that the Messiah would come once as a servant to be killed and once as a king to be ruled. Although there was theories about that before Jesus ever came, and especially now having their correspondences via the Dead Sea Scrolls, but also the ideas about Daniel and the Ancient of Days and the Son of Man there, and of course Isaiah's prophecies and things like that. So there was the postulation that there would be a two-stage coming of the Messiah, once as a servant and once as a king, even before that, just from the Old Testament texts. So, but of course, those people were mocked too. The two-stage coming of the Messiah, what craziness is that? So I think that it's a type that we should be quick, not so quick, to dismiss because it has precedence biblically, I think, as a Christian, who most of Christians do believe that Christ will come again, and when he does, it will be as a king. And I think that the Bible is just pretty consistent as far as types and stuff like that. So I don't know. I don't want to make too strong a case about something like a type, but I just think that it's important. So anyway, let me play this video. And I know that another thing, just quickly, I just want to really focus on this idea that I really did not want to do this. And it's because I know people will just totally wash their hands of me after I do this. But I just couldn't help it. It was something that I felt strongly had to be done. And I don't really care how many people... I think that's the key thing about not actually having money in truth-telling, because you are limited to that which you would say, because it would, if it had monetary implications, if you were going to say something that was unpopular and had monetary implications, it could keep you from doing it. I'll read this quote from C.S. Lewis, who we were talking about earlier before I play this video clip. He said, "Even in literature and art, no man who bothers about originality will ever be original. Whereas if you simply try to tell the truth without caring twopence how often it has been told before, you will, 9 times out of 10, become an original without ever having noticed it." The rapture is a very touchy subject, and culturally speaking, I find it to be absolutely fascinating. What I mean by that is that it seems to be mocked by a wide variety of people, by those that hate Christianity, which I'm only half joking when I say that gives the idea some credibility to me, but it is also mocked by certain Christians. I've done several studies on the harpazo, or rapture, over the past 2 years to decide what I thought about it, and have listened to many Christian theories about why it should be overlooked. The first thing that I found was that many Christians who righteously tell other Christians that they have been deceived by the rapture teaching are usually citing a reason that they themselves have failed to fact-check. I'm speaking of Margaret MacDonald. I can't tell you how many times this has been served up to me as the sole reason to ignore the rapture. They say that Margaret MacDonald had a satanically inspired vision which introduced the idea of the pre-tribulation rapture, and that this was later promulgated by John Nelson Darby. The first thing you should do when presented with this information is to ask the person to provide a specific quote from her vision that they feel is speaking of a pre-tribulation rapture. They will 9.5 times out of 10, if they are honest, tell you that they haven't actually read what it says. They have simply believed someone who had told them this story, which I would add is exactly what they are accusing everyone else of doing. The fact is that McDonald's vision doesn't speak at all of a pre-tribulation rapture. If anything, it is speaking of a post-tribulation rapture. But it's hard to even get that from the vision, because the timing of the rapture in her vision is very ambiguous. But it is definitely not pre-tribulation. And I find this more like a well-placed lie that has caused many people to simply stop studying the matter. Also, I have found her connections to John Darby are themselves contrived. Many people say that the pre-tribulation or pre-wrath rapture wasn't taught until the early 1700s, and therefore it couldn't be true. To that I would say that the early church did indeed teach it, up until the time when the Catholic Church took over. To me, the obvious reason that the teachings emerged again around the 1700s was because that was when the Bible, after well over 1,000 years of being unavailable to the common man, became widely read and studied again. All kinds of other true biblical teachings emerged at that same time that had been lost since the early days, because people were able to read it for themselves. So to say that it wasn't taught during the 1,000+ years that the Catholic Church kept people from reading the Bible isn't a very good explanation. It's like saying that we shouldn't believe the rapture because the Catholic Church didn't teach it. It is not my intention in this video to present a detailed case for any particular version of the rapture. As one famous scholar said, the reason that there is a debate is because there is a debate, meaning that a reasonable case can be made for different positions, but all generally seem to believe that a rapture of some sort will indeed happen. They differ on the time, however. I have determined in my own experience that anyone who claims that the rapture must be pre, post, mid, or pre-wrath, and excludes the possibility of any other explanation, hasn't really done their homework. Because, as convinced as I am of my position, I still have to give deep consideration to other passages that suggest to me that there is something that we are all missing. I see this as a clue, and I want to propose a theory about why there is so much speculation. I think that just as the angel told Daniel to seal up the words of his prophecy until the time of the end, I think it's possible that the rapture timing is similarly sealed up, intentionally difficult to discern perfectly. I often get the impression that there is a spiritual padlock on the question of the timing. I would suggest that this padlock is not for us, but for Satan. I have always considered that the rapture must be, if true, Satan's biggest fear. Satan is a serious student of Bible prophecy, you can bet, and I know he has spent some time considering this event, because unless he comes up with a way to explain it away to non-believers, he runs the risk of his entire scheme crashing down. After all, if people saw all the Christians taken away, they would be inclined to believe that the rapture was real and that Christianity was true, which is an unacceptable arrangement for Satan. If he knew the exact details of the timing, he could precisely plan for it, much like he did with knowing the prophecy of the birth of the Messiah and his attempts to kill all the firstborn, or many similar instances in the Bible that a Bible student could point you to. But if he only knows the general time, he, like us, can't plan as well for it. Nevertheless, I believe that he, like us, should know the general time. I want to propose a series of theories about the rapture and the deceptions that I think will surround it. People often discuss Project Bluebeam and similar theories, but I think that it's going to be a little more complicated than that. First, I want to suggest that Satan is going to kill two birds with one stone, so to speak, with his rapture explanation. I think the primary mission is to explain away this event to keep people from seeing the truth of it. But I think that he can use this explanation to get a lot more done for his ultimate goal. The same explanation can be used to unite the world to a single religion, while simultaneously giving a global reason to persecute Christians. After much thought, I am convinced, for several reasons, that this explanation will be aliens, along with certain aspects of the 2012 propaganda. And I think we are all being prepared for this in several ways. What if there was an event like a rapture? I tend to think it will be accompanied by a massive earthquake, like in the sixth seal in the book of Revelation, a la David Lowe's book, Earthquake Resurrection. But that's besides the point. What if aliens immediately showed up, claiming responsibility for the rapture? many of us would be so shocked we would be inclined to believe anything that they said. Now, before you think that I've gone completely mad, please understand that I've spent a great deal of time looking into testimonies of people about their encounters with these quote-unquote aliens, and I'm convinced that they are extra-dimensional entities, and that this is a spiritual phenomena with very physical components. And perhaps most interestingly is that they are very much subject to the authority of Jesus Christ. Please look into the description section for a huge list of references to this fact. So this brings up two points. One, that many people who have alien abduction experiences, and interestingly other experiences like channeling and other types of communication with this realm, report a similar preoccupation that these beings seem to have. Remember, this is reported by non-Christians who usually have no clue that they are actually communicating with demons who have a very specific agenda. They are usually told by the entities that they are talking to aliens, or angels, or light beings, or ascended masters, or whatever the person's paradigm allows. But the interesting thing is that they all say the entities are telling them to tell people about a coming cleansing of the earth, a ridding of the earth of those that are not ready for the new age. They are told that they will be taken away to be made ready to rejoin society. Very interesting, however, is that a certain percentage of the experiencers reverse it, and say that those that will be taken away are the ones that are prepared for the New Age, for instance, the New Age gurus, etc. In any case, I find the fact that the spiritual world being so preoccupied with getting humans to tell other humans this story, which amounts to getting them ready to explain a rapture-like event, is fascinating, and I think it's a big clue. The other aspect is that if it were true that these entities had figured out a way to gain physical bodies, which I'm still not convinced of, but were still subject to the authority of Jesus, which I am sure of, see description section, they would automatically find no spiritual resistance if they were to present themselves right after all the Christians just left. Sure, there would be many instant conversions after the rapture, but it would take some time for them to build up understanding of their spiritual powers over the demonic. After all, many Christians today don't even believe that they have any particular power. It is like it is said in the Bible, speaking of the church in the last days, they will have a form of godliness, but deny the power thereof. Can you imagine if, say, a major war was stopped in mid-war by alien ships who said that they had come to stop us from destroying ourselves, and they also told us that they were our creators via genetic engineering? This would cause a few things to happen. One, despite the fact that alien existence would in no way disprove the Bible, as the Bible makes no claim to exclusivity as far as the planet Earth is concerned, people will believe it thanks to a few decades-long propaganda campaign from the Rockefeller Foundation and movies like Contact with Jodie Foster. They will begin a new religion based on this, and it will create kind of a world patriotism which so many movies have depicted. This would overnight create not just a desire, but a demand for a world government. At that point, it would be very easy to use propaganda to paint Christians as the terrorists, as they did in the movie Contact, because they will be said to have been proven wrong. It will also be the pinnacle of a massive psychological campaign which has consistently reiterated that all wars are caused by religion, which is a very important lie that a great deal of money and effort has gone into propagating. See my video, Religious Wars, Fact or Fiction. This will cause the new united religious system to see the Christians as everything that was wrong with the old world, and it will allow for the justification of a genocide in that system. And that will be the end of this episode. I want to remind everybody, if they have a testimony of a miracle, then I would appreciate it if you could give me an email. Just give me a quick rundown of it at nowheretorun1984@gmail.com or chris@conspiracyclose.com. You can go to the website, nowheretorunradio.com. But if you could send me that, and then maybe I can give you a call, and we can do a quick interview, and I can start building up some information for this project I'm working on. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll talk to you very soon. Goodbye.